Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 167, recorded Saturday, September 19th, 2020. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast, 6 months on, and do we really need to keep travel credit cards? So coming to you from the Travel Commons studios in Chicago, Illinois, after a week's tour in the UP, Michigan's Upper Peninsula, for those of you not in the Midwest, I did a counterclockwise circle route around Lake Michigan, headed out east on Friday morning, stopped at a brewery in Grand Rapids for lunch, drove the 5 miles across the Mackinac Bridge just before dusk, and then had my first UP pasty, the first of many, and a local beer for dinner that night in Sault Ste. Marie. Spent a couple of days in Sioux, watched 700-foot lake freighters make their way through the docks that connect Lake Superior to Lake Huron. I'm still enough of an engineer, really, to geek out on that sort of stuff. It was pretty cool. We then drove west to Marquette for 3 days and again west to Houghton for 2 days before heading home through Wisconsin down the west side of Lake Michigan. It was all outdoor stuff, hiking, biking, kayaking, the kind of things that last-minute COVID closures or restrictions won't muck up. The UP has always been on my list of places to visit, but it's always been on sort of the B list, and so plans to go somewhere else, I don't know, Spain, Napa, Ireland, would always push it down the list. But now, with most of those kind of places blocked off with travel restrictions and quarantines or, you know, from a California standpoint, wildfires, the UP, drivable with a lot of outdoor activities, bubbled to the top of the list. And I wasn't the only one thinking that way. The guy renting rowboats at Taquamenon Falls State Park looked at our release forms and said, "We've had a lot of people up here from Chicago this summer. It's been crazy busy, and we just can't get enough people to handle it." And biking around Presque Isle Park in Marquette, we got talking in a socially distant way to a biking couple up from St. Louis. It was also their first time up in the UP. A bunch of their friends and families had been up earlier, and they said they'd seen nothing but UP pictures in their Facebook feed for the past month. The husband said that he had an underlying medical condition, and so they were looking for places away from people. They'd rented a cabin in the small town of Autrain, which got me thinking about the place that we were staying in Sioux, the Plaza Motor Motel. No lobby, no elevators, no hallways, no places to run into other guests, and no need to have to remember to mask up when you leave your room. Just open your room door, and there's the outside, and there's your car. Most frequent travelers would never think of voluntarily staying in a motor inn, a motel, but with so many things changing in these unprecedented times, maybe COVID will have folks given motels another chance. So following up, first, a big shout out to the folks in Hanoi, Vietnam, listening to Travel Commons on SoundCloud. I have to tell you, one of the fun things about the podcast is looking at where people are listening from. For the most part, the stats make sense. Most of the listeners are from the U.S., and then the next tier is from English-speaking countries, the U.K., Canada, Australia. But every once in a while, there's a spike that I just can't figure out. I'll see it. I'll go look at the episode notes to see if I've mentioned that country or that city. But usually, I can't make any sense out of it. Last fall, it was Argentina, but actually over the past couple of months, it's been folks from Hanoi, primarily listening to the April episode, episode number 162, about post-lockdown trip planning and keeping a travel journal. So I'm not sure why, but hey, if you're in Hanoi and you've made it to this episode, hi, and thanks for listening. Dan Grabin sent me a note at the beginning of the month about my lockdown reading that I mentioned during last month's episode, the interview with Dr. Emily Thomas. Mark, Dan wrote, "I feel your pain. I started rereading Walden back in April, and I just passed the halfway mark at the end of August. This was a part of an overly ambitious effort to read one great book a month from a literary calendar that I'd bought. The Brothers Karamazov took up January through March, and even though COVID should have meant more time to read, it just hasn't turned out that way. Writing this from a long overdue vacation near Lake George, where I saw the book Cabin Porn in a gift shop. Good timing. Thanks for keeping the podcast going. Helps me keep going in this time of not going much of anywhere. Dan, thanks for the note. The Brothers Karamazov, you are a better man than I. I mean, I can't even pronounce it, let alone read it. I swore off Russian fiction after suffering through Crime and Punishment in high school. That and Charles Dickens, I just can't do them anymore. And I am still working my way through Walden. I just got through his half dozen pages on hoeing his bean field. I find if I try to read more than a dozen pages in a sitting, I just start skimming or sleeping. Glad you were able to get away to the wilderness of Lake George. Feels like the perfect place to find the cabin porn book. Jim McDonough hit the Travel Commons Facebook page following up on my comment in last month's episode about my disappearing American Airlines flight from O'Hare to Barcelona. Jim writes, "We were going to Barcelona and Madrid with Rick Steves Europe in October, but of course Rick has canceled every tour for the rest of the year. Interestingly, American says we are still booked on a British Airways 747 from San Diego to Heathrow as part of this trip, even though BA has no more 747s and doesn't serve San Diego anymore." Well, Jim, I have to tell you, I sometimes think that any of those airline schedules that are more than, say, 1.5 months out are really more aspirational than reality, especially given how fast they're shifting schedules to capture any sort of bump in passenger volume, like United having some of their transcontinental flights that were nonstop. They're now having them stop in Denver to pick up a bump in volume from people visiting national parks. Well, there's that outdoor activity trend again. But back to that Barcelona trip, I should be, you know, packing up right now before heading off for 2 weeks in Catalonia. But as you've probably already guessed, that trip is not happening. Not a surprise that EU still isn't letting U.S. travelers in. And the case count in Spain's second COVID wave has gotten worse over the past month. So at the beginning of this month, I gritted my teeth, called American, and canceled the flight. Actually, what happened was American had called me the prior week while we were up in the UP, but I let it go to voicemail. First, we were in a tap room in Marquette, and I didn't really feel that I was ready nor cognizant enough to have that conversation. I wanted to have all our booking information in front of me and be clear-minded, which tough during a taproom session, and, you know, kind of mentally girded for battle. So when I returned their call that next week, I was sitting in front of my laptop with all my itinerary documents up and ready to go. It was a quick trip through the automated phone tree to what turned out to be a very nice woman in Dallas, and no hassles with canceling. I was asking her about the logistics of the travel credit because I just assumed that I was not getting my money back, that it was just going in the travel bank. So I was asking her, you know, how long is this going to be good for, stuff like that, when she said, "Well, since your flight was canceled and you were rebooked, you can get a refund if you like." Wow. Just wow. I'll take that, I quickly said, not wanting her offer to disappear. That was absolutely not what I expected from all the stories that I'd heard about American trying to keep and hoard as much cash as possible. It took her a couple of minutes to process the refunds, during which we compared the weather between Chicago and Dallas. The refunds hit my credit card the following week, so I have to say full kudos to American on handling this. I'm hoping that I don't need to repeat this in November for my Thanksgiving trip to London, but it's kind of looking that way. A couple of weeks back, I was trading notes with Travel Commons contributor Alan Marco about United's new San Francisco to Bangalore nonstop. It'll be their longest flight at 17.5 hours. I got to tell you, my immediate reaction was, that's a hell of a long time to wear a mask. United is using a 787-9 series with a special engine enhancement that makes the flight possible, which actually got me thinking about what planes I'd flown into Bangalore. I've been using TripIt since 2008, when it kind of first broke out of the Silicon Valley venture cap bubble. So I logged in and clicked over to past trips and then started clicking back through the pages and clicking because the last time I was in Bangalore was April 2014, which then got me looking around the screen. There's got to be a way to export all this trip data, but I couldn't find anything. So I sent the question to support@tripit.com. And to my huge surprise, Andy from the TripIt Help Center replied in 15 minutes saying, "We currently do not offer customer-driven travel export capability. We have passed your suggestion on to the appropriate team for review." Now, I got to tell you, having run a software product team, I knew what that meant, which was never. But in the next paragraph, Andy offered a solution. You can check out a third-party app called Open Flights. They have an API with TripIt that will allow you to import trips from your TripIt account to their site. And then from there, you can create a list of all your flights and download them to a CSV file that you can open up in Excel. Their basic account is free to use. Sweet. I thanked Andy for his quick reply and then hit Open Flights. I set up an account, hit the import button, and connected it to my TripIt account. Now, the import was, I got to tell you, a bit kludgy. I had to go page by page, review each trip, mark it for import. But after 88 pages, I had imported 1,006 flight segments, which then they displayed on a world map. I clicked on Bangalore Airport, and a little card popped up. And I clicked on the first option, and it listed the 8 flights that I had taken to and from Bangalore. Turns out I had mostly flown Airbus A320s, which was kind of a surprise to me, though I did once fly a 747-400 in from Frankfurt on Lufthansa. So it's kind of a cool site. It has a couple of analysis buttons, like my longest flight, Joburg to Washington Dulles, at 17 hours, 40 minutes, so 10 minutes longer than the San Francisco-Bangalore flight. And then my shortest, Washington Dulles again, but this time a 44-minute flight to Charlottesville. And of course, I was able to download all my trips into Excel so I can noodle around with them to my heart's content. Open Flights is free, but I'm definitely going to donate to keep them going. It's not slick, but it's a cool little service. I like it. Check it out. Definitely recommended. Openflights.org, not .com, .org, O-R-G. I'll put links in the show notes. And hey, if you have any travel stories, questions, comments, tips, rants, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or audio comment to comments, C-O-M-M-E-N-T-S, at travelcommons.com. You can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or the Instagram account at Travel Commons, or post those comments on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is 6 months on. You know, finally giving into reality and canceling my Barcelona flight 6 months after booking it got me thinking back on these, you know, it's coming, unprecedented times. Airlines canceled flights to China at the end of January, then to South Korea, Iran, and Italy in February, and then, you know, by the beginning of March, airline traffic had joined the stock market in this incredible freefall. But back then, we thought it was a one-off event, kind of like September 11th, a sharp, scary event that came out of nowhere with no warning, but eventually would pass. So taking advantage of one of those many March fare sales to book a flight at the end of September didn't seem that risky. I was talking to one of my consulting friends a couple of weeks ago. His travel schedule used to be similar to mine. A week without seeing an airport was a rare exception. But now he hasn't been on a plane since March, and he doesn't know when he'll get on one next. He actually just started a project with a manufacturer in Cincinnati. Most of the project will be virtual, but he's pretty sure he ought to, you know, at least go down and put eyes once on that plant. He lives outside of Detroit. In the past, he'd be flying down to Cincinnati every week. Now he fires up Google Maps. It's a 4.5-hour drive from where he lives down to Cincinnati, down I-75. He'll drive down once, stay a couple of days, and then head back home. I can't say that anyone that I've talked to misses the act of business travel. You know, getting up at 0:30 Monday morning to get to the airport, shuffle through the pre-check line for 15 to 20 minutes, and then shoehorn yourself into a full flight for an hour or three. But we did it because that was part of the job. And now that it's not, at least for now and for what seems like for now through the end of the year, everybody's taken full advantage of sleeping in. And sleeping in their own beds, which explains why, of all the U.S. airlines, Spirit Airlines, with its complete focus on low-cost leisure travelers, is the only one sounding even somewhat non-negative. And hotel chains like Choice, which are focused on what they call drive-to locations and also extended stay places, are getting occupancy rates that are over 50%, while Center City hotels like Chicago's Hilton Palmer House are missing rent payments and sort of slouching towards bankruptcy. Irene and I were sitting outside at a microbrewery a couple of days ago on Thursday, and enjoying a Sunday afternoon full in the knowledge that we have maybe 4 weeks left of outdoor eating and dining in Chicago. We talked about what kind of travel we would do over the next 12 months, figuring that travel restrictions and periodic lockdowns are going to be the norm for at least that long. No big plans. We don't want anything that COVID could blow up. But, we'd like to go see some new places. So, maybe some skiing, maybe trying out Montana this time instead of our usual Breckenridge or Lake Tahoe play. Some hiking. I don't know, maybe checking out the Texas Hill Country for something new. But next month, we're trading Barcelona for Philadelphia. Well, now that they've opened up their restaurants again, that's a hell of a trade. But we'll check out our old neighborhood. We lived there in the late 80s, early 90s, and we're going to visit with some friends that we haven't seen for a while. It's going to be Irene's first flight since February, which took a bit of talking to do. But really, I think that it was the threat of a total of 22 hours in a car with me alone that really closed the sale. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, do we keep travel credit cards? Last week, Delta used their SkyMiles program to back $6.5 billion with a B in debt, running the same play that United and American did in June. Now, what caught my eye was some of the stats that came out with that debt filing, that SkyMiles had about $6.1 billion in revenue just in 2019, and about two-thirds of that came from selling miles to American Express, which issues a co-branded Delta card. And on the other hand, total miles redeemed fell by 78% in the first half of the year. Now, the big carriers are leaning on their loyalty programs for cash, and the biggest customers for those miles are credit card issuers. But those card users, us, are generating points that we've stopped using. So it's against this background that I called up Matt Schulz, chief credit analyst at LendingTree, to ask him, do we want to keep using travel credit cards? So in today's Travel Commons podcast, I'd like to welcome Matt Schulz, chief credit analyst at LendingTree, talking to Matt about travel credit cards. Matt, a lot of folks carry at least one travel credit card. We're 6 months on now from the COVID lockdowns, but with travel not recovering, airline demand is still a third of pre-pandemic levels. And United Airlines CEO last week said it was going to be, 3 to 4 years, he thought, before they get back to 2019 levels. What are travel credit card holders doing with these cards that are generating frequent traveler points that, either they can't or they don't want to use?
Well, an awful lot of people are closing them simply because they may need to use those points that they had been planning to go on a trip to Paris or to Hawaii, but they need to use that money as, or those points as money to keep food on the table and that sort of thing. Our survey that we just did found that about 30% of respondents with travel rewards cards said that they had closed one. And that number is even higher for millennials. And that's got to be something that scares the banks to death. It's not a terribly surprising for all the reasons that you ticked off a minute ago. And I don't think that's going to slow down anytime terribly soon either.
So people are closing them out, so they're not taking those annual fees.
I mean, our survey found that about half of those who had been laid off or furloughed had cashed out some of their points or miles. And again, it stands to reason, because when you're trying to keep the lights on and keep food on the table, there are things that are more important than travel rewards. And really, I think that that's a lot of what this comes down to, where if you are somebody who feels pretty stable in that job, has a decent emergency fund, and generally feels kind of okay about things despite all of economic chaos, you're probably going to try and hold on to those miles.
Makes sense. Back in March and April, it seemed like the strategy for those big travel card issuers, Chase, Citi, Amex, the strategy seemed to be to sacrifice revenue to hold share. So statement credits for annual fees, if you call them, to cancel, new bonuses for stay-at-home purchases to keep wallet share. I mean, seemed like the 5-time bonus for gas and grocery spending was the most popular one.
Sure.
That made sense when everybody was talking, oh, this is just going to be a 2-week shutdown and we're going to have a V-shaped recovery. But, you know, kind of as we said before, travel is going to stay depressed for a while. How are travel card companies going to handle then this next round of renewals? Do I get more statement credits? Do they continue to fight for share? And
so I think what's going to happen is that issuers are going to continue to tinker around the edges to see what people like and what is impactful. And the truth is that issuers desperately want to keep the customers on cards like Chase Sapphire Reserve, Amex Platinum, all the high end and kind of that next step down in card, because those customers are so valuable from a lifetime value perspective. So you may get a travel card when you're 25, and the bank will do what it can to keep you around to try and upsell you to other products that they might have. The issuers are going to kind of try and do what they can to figure out how to make you stay. And right now, that may not look like giving a ton of travel rewards points.
Matt, any recommendations that you're giving to travel card holders as we're thinking about going forward through the end of the year and into the beginning of next year?
What I would say is that you really have to know your situation and understand it. And you also have to not feel guilty if you have to cash in your points that you had been saving up for that dream trip in order to help you extend your budget. Nobody gets a high-end travel card with a high annual fee hoping to eventually cash that in for groceries at Walmart. But sometimes these things have to happen. If you have the financial wherewithal and you can hold on to those points, I think it's worth doing, because we are going to travel again. Nobody knows when, but we are going to travel again. And assuming that your whole financial situation is generally okay, I think there is value in holding on to those points as something to look forward to in the future.
Thanks very much. Matt Schulz, Chief Credit Analyst at LendingTree. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for joining us on the Travel Commons podcast and giving us your thoughts on that.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 167. I hope you all enjoyed it, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. You can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Alexa, iTunes, Spotify, and now Amazon Music. The links to all of these services, along with the RSS feeds if you want to subscribe in your own podcast listener, those are all on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website at travelcommons.com, and it's under the heading that says subscribe. And then right below that in the social media section are links to the Travel Commons Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram feed. So please hit one of them, subscribe, and if you're already subscribed, how about leaving us a review on one of those sites? And again, if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or to M. Peacock on Twitter. Write them on the Travel Commons page on Facebook or the Instagram site, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. And thanks to everyone who's taken time to send in emails like Dan, tweets, post comments on the Facebook page like Jim McDonough, or leave comments on the website. I really do appreciate it. And for all of you, hope everybody's staying safe. Hope you find a way to get a little bit of travel in. And until we talk again, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.